This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the TrackOut Multimedia Studios in the Chicagoland area, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott, and we have a packed show for you today. Hopefully, you enjoyed your Independence Day holiday in the United States. If you enjoyed your Canada Day holiday, if you reside north of the border, and we welcome you as well to Inside Open Wheel. By the way, we're live on Apple Podcasts now, so make sure you subscribe. Get those push notifications when we release new episodes. Anyway, big show for you today. Jay Howard development driver Christian Bogle joins us in just a little bit. He is racing in F4 and in IndyCar's USF 2000, so we'll talk about that. Another interesting rise in his open wheel career for him, just like our guest last week, Jordan Missig. We also have Tony Perella from SVRA, Perella Holdings. He is going to be the new promoter for F4, FR Americas next year. Very interesting sit down with him, and I'm really excited for the future of FR Americas and F4. We'll also have IndyCar Radio's Nick Yeoman to talk about the IndyCar race, what happened throughout the race. We'll also discuss some inner workings within IndyCar and talk about his weekend at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, working with IndyCar Radio and with the Performance Racing Network. Other than that, just your normal show here. So make sure if you find us on Facebook, on the Inside Open Wheel, at Inside Open Wheel on Twitter, or any questions you may have, insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Going to start things off with a quick touch of IndyCar. Scott Dixon, dominant win for him. Second place, Graham Rahal. Third, Simon Pagenaud. We'll have more on the IndyCar race near the end of the show, so definitely stay tuned for that. It's going to be an entertaining interview, sit-down, I should say, with Nick Yeoman, as it always is. Formula Race Productions also ran at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course over the weekend in F1600. Simon Sykes makes it 4-for-4 for the first race on Sunday. Yeah, the first race on Sunday, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Dylan Christie second. Dexter Zuba finishes third. Zuba gets his first win in race two with Sykes second, and Chris in third, and Jackson Lee makes his first step onto the top of the podium this season in the third race. Max Easterson second, Zuba third, and Sykes didn't even run a lap. We'll find out more about that later on, but I did hear from my source within within Mid-Ohio that race one, which is supposed to be Saturday, was postponed after a botched start in the first attempt for the start. Second attempt, the field went three wide going into China Beach. As you know, at Mid-Ohio, the start typically is off of turn number four, and there was a pretty big pileup, so the cleanup kind of took the time that FRP needed to run the race. And in the drivers' meeting, the drivers were told that this isn't iRacing, so looks like that they cleaned up their act to run all three races on Sunday. So we'll see what happens throughout the rest of the season. But those who have raced at Mid-Ohio know it's a little treacherous when they wave the when they have the green start, a rolling start over there at turn number three. In F2000, Brandon Dixon, Nick Palacio, and Luca Mars take 1, 2, and 3 for both races. In race 1, your overall winner in F1000 winner was Tim Pierce. Race 2, Alex Mayer took overall, and in F1000. Atlantic, once again, I don't think there's any stopping Keith Grant. He wins both races. Richard Zober finishes second. Larry Howard third. One thing we're going to talk with Nick Yeoman about later on in the show is going to be the start of the road to Indy this weekend at Road America. Thursday and Friday, we're going to see the doubleheaders with F2000 and Indy Pro 2000, I should say. We're going to get our Road to Indy insider. He is the Road to Indy insider as well on here. His name is Rob Howden. As I said, Rob and I have known each other for a decade, and I've been trying to get some other guests on here as well, so we'll get those taken care of throughout the show. But it's going to be interesting this weekend. As we said, Thursday and Friday is going to be the Road to Indy opener for USF 2000 and Indy Pro 2000. Saturday and Sunday, that is when we see the doubleheader Rev Group Grand Prix at Road America. Saturday is going to be a later race. That's going to be on NBCSN. Sunday's race, an earlier race, but going to be on NBC. So we'll see how those numbers line up compared to what we saw last year at Road America. But both races are going to be on the IndyCar Radio Network. Vintage Indy also joins the festivities at Road America this weekend. So if you get a chance to get out there, make sure you get some cool pictures of some of those vintage Indy cars before the Hawk, which is that next weekend. Other than that, Formula Race Promotions and F4 FR Americas, they take the weekend off. They're all going to be at Virginia International Raceway next weekend. So we'll have full coverage of that starting next week. Coming up on Inside Open Wheel, we sit down with Christian Bogle. He's got a busy season on his hands, and we're going to talk about that next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, what better way to get your season started by winning the opening round of your championship? Oh, this is also coming off of sweeping the closing round of your championship at one of the most prestigious races in the United States. Well, one driver has done that, and that is Christian Bogle from J. Howard Driving Development. Christian, welcome to Inside Open Wheel, and congratulations on such a powerful weekend.
Hi, thank you for having me, and I'm really happy with the results this past weekend, and hopefully we can carry that on to the next few rounds.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, but I do want to get started on how you got started. Now, a lot of drivers in open wheel usually start in karting. You took what, and like last week, we had Jordan Missig on. He didn't take a conventional route to go into open wheel from FR Americas, but you actually started off in not only autocross, but doing select high-performance drivers education events.
Yes. Unlike most drivers, I didn't start with karting or anything along those sorts. I actually ended up driving different sports cars and at autocross events and just anywhere I could kind of get my hands on track and just see what I could do.
Now, what did you normally drive for these HPDE events and autocross events?
So I have a 1994 Miata, which I usually drove quite a bit. My dad owns a few different cars that he usually lets me drive, which are pretty fun to have on track. And I would usually do these NASA NOLA weekends at NOLA Motorsports Park to get on the big track, and then the autocross events, the SCCA autocross events, to actually get onto the skid pad.
Okay, yeah, I've been to NOLA before. Very, very beautiful and unique racetrack. And, of course, doing those autocross events in a Miata, sideways and smiling, as I always jokingly say, that had to have translated well when you first got into open wheel car.
Yes. At the time, whenever I first got into the open wheel car, I had no idea what I was getting into. I had no idea that racing was going to be this complex. And J. Howard has done a really, really good job of coaching me and helping me learn through this entire experience and getting better at every single step on the way.
So I've got to ask, why go from Miata to an open-wheel car?
It was actually my dad's idea, because I've always been fascinated with the world of racing, and the one that's always captivated my mind the most has had to be open-wheel racing with IndyCar and Formula One. My dad had actually looked up and found a junior Formula series called Formula 4. So that's really where it started, and we just wanted to see how we could do from there, and he found J. Howard Driver Development, and we were able to call him up and able to start testing.
Now, first of all, where was your first test at, and what was that like jumping in from basically a go-kart on steroids into a Formula car?
Yeah, the first test was at Autobahn Country Club back in I believe mid-2018. It was a bit of a shocker to get in one of those cars. It was a experience of a lifetime, and I'm so glad that I can actually keep doing it and keep driving.
I'm actually the track announcer there, so I know that track very well. If there's any track you want to be at for your first test or anything, really, it's Autobahn, because you can just, if you go off, you don't have a wall to hit right away. You've got time at least.
Autobahn is such a good track for beginners and learning new cars. If you've already been on that track, is super, super smooth. It's a super, super simple layout. And like you said, there's not a lot of walls to actually hit there.
Christian Bogle joins us. He runs not only in the F4 Championship here in the United States, also has done some IndyCar USF 2000 championships. Your first race, you actually in 2018 really dipped around. You did F4, did some Atlantic Championship, and also some F2000. So you have two cars that are kind of similar and one that's just not even similar at all. So what was the reasoning behind doing these three series?
So we ended up doing, so the FRP was actually in the F4 car.
Okay.
So we actually were in a different class with the F2000 cars. And that was purely to get seat time before I ended up doing my first F4 US race at the end of the year, towards the end of the year. And USF2000, we absolutely loved the car, loved the series, and we really wanted to get into that that series full time for 2020. So we did a fairly large amount of testing in 2018 trying to prepare me for the series.
So 2019, you go over and you run both F4 and USF 2000. F4, you have a little bit more success, but that was at the biggest race of the year for really any open wheel driver outside the Indianapolis 500, and that's the US Grand Prix.
Yes, it was pretty surprising to be able to accomplish those kind of results at COTA, especially talking about where I was at the beginning of the year. Starting at Road Atlanta for the first race in F4 that in 2019, I was actually fairly off pace. I believe I was back in around 20th at the beginning of the year, and I was able to work my way all the way up through the ranks through the year and able to finish on top at COTA.
Now, outside of obviously having Jay Howard, having the track time at the Autobahn Country Club, what else did you do to kind of get up to speed with, you know, the F4 Ligier and running an open-wheel car?
Yeah, a big part of it was actually making sure I was actually fit in the car. So I've taken the past few years, ever since I've started, to really try my best to get as fit as I can. I've had a bit of a weight loss journey with this. So weight is very large in these cars, especially if you're over ballast. Obviously, everyone's going to be at a pretty similar weight. But if they can't match that weight to how much you weigh, obviously you're going to be a little bit out of it with how much weight you have in the car compared to everyone else.
Now, do you work? Do you do this weight loss regimen both at the track and away from the track, or is it just away from the track? And then when you get to the track, okay, I got to focus on what I've got to do.
Yeah, typically at home, I will focus on the weight loss side. And whenever I get to the track, I usually try and maintain the best I can just to keep my focus on racing and not really on that side of anything. So I want to be at maximum focus whenever I get in the car.
And with Jay Howard Driving Development, it's a newer team. In terms of what teams are, Jay Howard running the Indy 500, how much of a help has it been having someone who gets it, who's been there, you know, from day one, you know, since they were little, to be able to run a quickly successful team?
Yeah, Jay has been an amazing driver coach. I mean, he's taken me from essentially nothing to where I am today, and I have him to thank me. I have him to thank for that because he's just been there every step of the way, just helping me, pushing me, making sure I get better, and telling me all the right things to make sure I understand the dynamics of the car, how it works, how to drive it, and it's really been unbelievable.
All right, so this season, you were scheduled to run both F4 and USF 2000. Let's talk about the St. Petersburg weekend. You did at least have a little bit of practice. Obviously, with somebody who's newer to the racing scene, you know, it's odd, but for somebody who's been around, it was extremely odd with the way that the St. Petersburg weekend went down. So go ahead and talk about your experience on, you know, getting out there running, and then all of a sudden, well, guys, we're going home.
Yeah, it was definitely a fairly interesting weekend, to say the least. I mean, stuff like this does not happen every lifetime. So coming into the weekend, I mean, we have all heard about the pandemic, and obviously, everyone, we got to be safe around each other. We can't be, we kind of had to enforce social distancing in the paddock and all that sort of stuff. And to be able to go out and get a first practice session and then for them to turn around and say that the weekend was canceled, it was fairly disappointing. But the break actually out of the car was the most, I guess, disappointing part, because you always look forward to that long winter, after the long winter break, to getting back in the car and finally getting back to racing. And then that break was just extended. And then it just felt like the longest 3 months, and everything just kind of melded together into a just one super long break.
And that break ended this past weekend at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. What were your feelings and thoughts getting, you know, back into the car, having that long break, and you know, starting a brand new season in June, basically?
Yeah, definitely getting back into the car was the best feeling, especially getting back to racing. Because last official race that I had was actually at COTA last year, and it's been quite a bit of time since then. So definitely finally getting back and racing the car wheel to wheel has been definitely, the feeling is great. It's almost like driving your first race again.
And let's talk about that weekend too, because even the weekend couldn't get away without being strange. First race, my understanding was, because all of it was run behind the safety car, according to FIA regulations, that race doesn't count because there's no actual wheel-to-wheel racing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So you technically, quote-unquote, won without winning. Race two, tell me about, for our listeners, tell me about a typical F4 weekend, how it would go with a doubleheader.
Yeah. Typically, F4 weekend, you start off with the practices, and you go into the qualifying and the race one grid. And usually, if a race one goes well, this grid is determined by the times in race one. So with this unique Mid-Ohio weekend, since race one, we didn't get we was mostly under caution. We didn't have any lap times to actually take from race one into race two. So we ended up actually taking the qualifying grid back into race two.
Okay. So let's say, for example, it was a normal race weekend. You're sitting there, maybe middle of the pack. Do you just, at that point, treat the race as a qualifying session, or are you going to try and obviously get up if you're close enough to somebody?
Yeah. Obviously, for the beginning of the race, you want to, obviously that's when the cars are most bunched up and you're going to try and get as many positions as you can. But if towards the end of the race you're not really making any progress and you have a pretty large gap to the car in the front, and you have a decent gap to the cars behind, then I would say slow up and try and get a lap in before the end of the first race, so you can actually get a decent starting position for the second race.
All right, and let's talk about race number two, where you came away with the first one of the season for F4, starting from pole as well. So that has to be a great feeling, not only going into the rest of the F4 season, but now you get to take that same momentum, not only into USF 2000, but you get to take that same mindset into when IndyCar goes back to Mid-Ohio later on the season.
Yes, I'm really excited to actually back to Mid-Ohio for USF 2000. It's actually now become one of my favorite tracks. I love the super technical section in the back with 5 through 9, and it's just such a fun track to drive. But I'm definitely looking forward to the USF 2000 weekend there.
And you just got back from your USF 2000 test. Seems like it's going to be a pretty competitive season this year, with some drivers who probably couldn't make it to Indy Lights staying another year. So you're going to have a lot of good competition in that series.
Oh yeah, definitely. The level of competition in USF 2000 is very, very good. All the drivers are super, super close, and most of the time the top 10 are just separated by just about a second, which makes the racing very, very close. Always have a wheel-to-wheel action.
All right, so outside of USF 2000 and F4, what are you looking forward to most this season?
Most this season? That's a tough one. I mean, most of the break, I was just looking forward to getting back in the car and racing. But I would say highlight of the season is probably going to be going back to COTA and Formula 4.
Fantastic. Well, Christian, thanks for joining us today. How can fans keep up with your progress, not only this season, but throughout the rest of your career?
Yeah, definitely. The best way to keep up will be to use my Instagram handle. It's @SteveBogleRacing. I post there all the time, off when I'm away from the racetracks or I'm at the racetracks. And also I have a Twitter with the same handle, at Siebold Racing. And those are definitely the best ways to keep up with me.
All right, Christian, thanks for joining us. We'll keep up with your career. We'll have you back on again because I have a feeling that this isn't the first time we're going to see some success out of you.
All right. That sounds great.
Coming up next, more Inside Open Wheel to come. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
We touched on this news last week just a little bit, and the title from FR Americas, SCCA Pro Racing Pirelli Ford Strategic Partnership. And if you've been following vintage racing over the past couple of years, you know the name Tony Pirelli. And this is actually some huge news to see F4 US and FR Americas added to what is known as the SVRA Speed Tour format. And joining us now is Tony Pirelli. Tony, congratulations. This is great for you. That's great for, you know, the two series. What brought you to this point in time?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Jeremy. I appreciate it. Honestly, it's been an evolution. You know, way back in 2012, which seems like a long time ago, but 8 years ago, Pirelli Motorsports Holding acquired SVRA, and along that journey, we also acquired controlling interest in the road racing Trans Am series, which most folks know about. And that really started a partnership between my company and SCCA Pro, where SCCA Pro sanctions the actual agreement. So they'll do the race operations, timing and scoring, and that element of it. But Pirelli Motorsports handles all the marketing and, you know, everything from registering the drivers all the way up through to putting them on the track and all the sponsorship engagements. So the opportunity showed itself to get involved with FRA and F4 and to add to, as you said, to our Speed Tour events. And we're just excited because I think that brings another a new young demographic to our existing company. If you looked at the race series that we're involved with, SVRA is the vintage racing, which is predominantly, not 100%, but predominantly older racers that, you know, have made their money, they've made their mark in business, and now they're chasing their dream, sometimes in their 50s, 60s, and sometimes even older, just to finally touch that dream of being on a racetrack. Trans Am has a fair share of young guns that are coming up through the ranks that are training to perhaps go to NASCAR or some other level of road racing. But that's everything from young kids to middle age, I would say. And now with FRA and F4, these are pups. Those are two developmental drivers, professional driver ranks that they actually do get a purse and compete for a championship and in some cases a pretty significant scholarship to get to the next level. And that really what did it for me. That was the exciting part. So, you know, we've made our mark in Trans Am. It's really starting to take off and revitalize that series. SVRA is arguably the largest vintage racing organization in the world. And now with FRA and F4, we get to really showcase young kids, develop them, get them ready for the next step. And hopefully some of them will go on to become prominent IndyCar or F1 drivers. That's the dream.
And the last event at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course was when everybody was together. 33 F4 U.S. cars. They ran their races. FR Americas had their highest bumping grid. Some great racing throughout, and thankfully we were able to watch it via streaming for that. Trans Am has streaming, and you also brought streaming to SVRA, which is somewhat of an unknown here in the United States, but if you go over to England, I mean, you see, you know, Goodwood and all sorts of neat vintage events on TV.
Yeah, in fact, it's funny you say that. That's the vision to combine it all, where you use the SVRA app or a Transam app, or at some point a FRA app or F4 app, and you watch, the full race streaming. Families and friends and fans can watch it. This entire year, we started in Sebring, and now we've had Mid-Ohio to the case. We had, interestingly, over 1.5 million impressions watching that streaming over the weekend. And that'll show you the strength of the show. We had an excess of 400 cars total for the weekend, which for Mid-Ohio was a record for us as putting the event on. And so I'm excited to see the potential, with all the awareness with F1 and IndyCar and Penske revitalizing that. F1 obviously has enjoyed some worldwide fame. If we can grab our piece of that in the United States and just carve out our niche in mainstream motorsports in this country, I think we'll have a very unique product. It's amazing how many families and second or third generation drivers, dad or grandpa is racing in vintage racing, a son or a daughter is racing in Trans Am, or now possibly in FRA and F4. So we're pumped to keep the racing alive at all different levels. And the show's fantastic. I mean, have 400 plus cars in this environment at Mid-Ohio was fantastic. There was something there for everyone, whether if you're an open wheel, closed wheel, purpose built, or production level type fan, there was something there for somebody.
Tony Perella joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. He is the owner of Perella Motorsports Holdings, which also owns SVRA and is now a big part of a strategic partnership with F4 US and FR Americas. As we talked about, we already saw what you did with the live streaming, and I have to say, even being able to watch, Trans Am Racing and all that on my phone is fantastic. I don't get a chance to get out to vintage events as much as I'd like to, but hopefully that'll change sooner rather than later. But what do you have moving forward for the rest of the year? What do you have planned for F4 and FR Americas to promote it and get more eyes on the sport?
Well, first off, I officially don't take over to the marketing of the program to at the end of this year.
Oh,
we
okay.
were able to, because some of their events canceled early this year with COVID-19, I was able to squeeze them into our Mid-Ohio event, where as this year unfolds and each state is in a different state of allowing racing or with fans, without fans, etc., we're looking for ways to do a couple more events this year. But we own a platform called Speed Tour, and it has a worldwide magazine. And right now the magazine publication, over 16,000 magazines get printed in each edition, plus we have a digital version of it. So the first up is just building the awareness of FRA and F4 this year and getting our arms around the plan and the schedule for next year. I think you'll see going into 21 a more robust schedule. I think you'll see it teamed up with Trans Am and a lot. So there'll be an open wheel and Trans Am racing on the same weekend. I think you'll see us promote the heck out of it with the magazine and cover the racing in our Speed Tour platform. And then, of course, the live streaming, we're really starting to hit some respectable numbers. And the other piece that'll drive this, one of the things that we've done under the SVRA banner is we launched the V-Rock series, which is a charity series with IndyCar, Formula One and NASCAR legends that come in and they drive a Camaro, a Mustang, or a Corvette from 1963 to 1972 vintage. And we pair them up with an amateur and we go out and do a 45-minute dirt race. So you got guys like Willie T. Ribbs, Al Unser Jr., Lynn St. James, the who's who of open wheel racing has come in and volunteered, and we've raised over $1 million for different children's charities. So this is a great opportunity for these kids in F4 and FRA to talk to and get direct access to a Johnny Rutherford or a Willie T or any of the names that I mentioned, and, you know, Davy Jones, Roberto Guerrero, of all that level, Paul Tracy, have all raced with us. And, you know, they've been on the biggest stage. So to have a chance for these kids that have aspirations to go to the next step in professional open wheel racing, who better than to sit and rub elbows at a dinner or a weekend to the guys who have done it before you and built the sport. So I'm really excited of combining an FRA F3 event with a V-Rock race where these kids meet their heroes, get a chance to pick their brain, and you know, the mentoring that they can provide is unreal, and they're so willing to do it. It's amazing in this day of professional sports when you read about these, you know, crazy lucrative contracts. These guys come in and literally do it for free for the love of the sport and for the fans and for the charity work to give something back. When you look on our website of who's raced with us, it'll blow your mind. I mean, my personal, I raced in one of my events. Al Unser Sr., four-time winner of the 500, was my co-driver at Indy. So we're talking tall cotton here with these legends, that's for sure.
And one of the
who's who of the sport.
And one of the legends who I know personally, I've known since I started working in racing, was Tom Bagley, and he was the one who told me about this concept.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, that's...
Tom's raced with us, I think, almost every year at Indy. He was in the inaugural V-Rock race, and we started just in Indy. Now we've expanded to other venues as well, or we raced at VIR in Atlanta. We're hoping to have one at COTA this year. It's just so much is up in the air with this COVID, but it's a really neat concept, and the pros love it because they can come back and they're racing in front of their kids or grandkids at a time they didn't get to do that when they were in the sport. And it just gives them a chance. It's like a family reunion almost of sorts. And it's really been it's patterned after the old IROC series. And, you know, to get in, you've had to run in NASCAR's highest level or IndyCar, you know, in the Indy 500 or, and, you know, in the case of Formula One, you've been a Formula One driver, something to that level, Roast Le Mans, IMSA, something at the highest stage, and been a champion. And so that's it's tall cotton, but it's pretty neat.
Now, I want to touch on, before I let you go, I do want to talk more about this Speed Ventures program. And you have the print publication, you have the digital publication. Where do you see this going forward now that you have, you know, an international formula? You have Trans Am, you have a vintage series all under your belt. Do you, yes, I mean, F4, FR Americas, you know, that's for, you know, people can go and run, you know, IndyCar after that or some sort of bigger open wheel form. But do you see this becoming a place where a kid gets his license, starts an F4, runs an FR Americas, then makes the jump to Trans Am, stays there for maybe, you know, 20, 30 years, and then maybe I'll go run some vintage races too?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not everybody, let's face it, with, you know, 33 cars starting Indy 500, typically 43 cars in a NASCAR Cup race, that's a pretty small talent pool when you look at the scale of the world racing in those series. So every once in a while, somebody starts in the ladder system and climbs it all the way to the top. But I think this is an opportunity for any level of racer that wants to really see if they got the right stuff to go the distance, or school them and develop them where they can be involved in motorsports, exactly like you say. Their vision may change where they did open wheel. Now they want to go road racing in a Trans Am car. Maybe they want to just say, to heck with the professional side, I just want to play with the car and enjoy it. I want to race hard, but I, you know, it's not for all the marbles. It's not a win at any cost. That's more of a vintage racing application. And so it just gives you a chance to touch your dream. I mean, at any level, whether you're in SVRA vintage class, whether you're in a Trans Am class, or whether you're now going to be an F4 or FRA, I liken it to your skill set. If you compare it to a stick and ball sport, is probably comparable to a Division One football player, baseball player, or whatever. And very, very few get to go to that next step of the NBA or the NHL or possibly the NFL or Major League Baseball. You got to be pretty doggone good to be in Division One to play at that level. That's what I like in my racers app. Every once in a while, you're going to get one that goes the extra mile and goes all the way to the highest level. If not, they still can really enjoy competing on the biggest stages in the world. And so the same analogy that I gave you for if you're a College One player and you played baseball for a major university and suddenly for a weekend you get to suit up, wear the pinstripes, and go play baseball in Yankee Stadium, what an honor. And so when you consider that our drivers get to drive at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Sebring International, Virginia, Watkins Glen, Circuit of the Americas, Laguna Seca, all these household names of racetracks, of the best road courses in this country, we have a date. And so it's really the best of all worlds. Yes, it's exciting when we groom one to get all the way. And I think with this FRA and F4, I'm going to have kids at some point. I'm going to have one that started with us, and I'm going to watch him as a fan in the Indy 500. And what a thrill that's going to be to know that we gave that kid a start. Or a Trans Am racer that I've had several of them race with us that have aspirations to go to NASCAR. And, this weekend in the Infinity Series, Jeb Bush raced with us, and he obviously he's raced with our V-Rock series and raced with SRA. So I think there's Jeb Burton, I'm sorry, not Jeb, but I think there's an opportunity here that whatever you're looking for as a driver, there's going to be something here for you. Or as a fan, you'll watch some amazing racing at some of the best tracks in the country.
Well, Tony, thank you for joining us on Inside Open Wheel. I'm really excited to see what happens here in the future. We're definitely going to keep tabs on that. But if, say, I'm a parent who has the kid coming up through karting and they want to run an F4, next year, and they want to find out more about how everything's going to run next season, how will they get a hold of you?
Literally, they can just go to the FRA or F4 website, or they're welcome. They can contact me at tony@sbra.com. I'll get them hooked up with the best and the brightest on our teams. We want this. If some kid's got the aspirations to go racing, we want to make it as easy as possible to remove the barriers of entry and get them in the car. And it's racing is never inexpensive. It'd be silly to say it's inexpensive, but for professional race series, this is about as cost effective as you can enter the sport. And a little bit of sponsorship and hard work, and people can go racing at a very high level. So we're pumped up. But tony@sbra.com is the easiest way to get me. And I'm happy to connect the dots for anybody that's got aspirations to go racing.
Fantastic. Tony Perella from SVRA Perella Motorsports Holdings and the promoter next year for F4 United States and FR Americas. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jeremy. I really appreciate you having me on.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Nick Yeoman of IndyCar Radio comes to break down the GMR Grand Prix and his observations from the weekend at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You're listening to Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Don't forget, if you want to listen back to any of the previous interviews with Christian Bogle or Tony Perella, you can do so by going on to Apple Podcasts. Yes, we're back on Apple, actually now on Apple Podcasts. Make sure that you follow us so whenever a new episode drops, you can go ahead and get a push notification for that. Joining me now from the IndyCar Radio Network, a man who called three different races, and by and far, I'm jealous he got to call the second one on Saturday instead of the Snooze Fest. Oh, did I say that too loud? Nick Yeoman joins me from the IndyCar Radio Network. How's it going, bud?
I'm good, Jeremy. It's good to talk to you again, my friend.
Oh, it's great to have you on. I think we got to make you a permanent rotating analyst, because every time we get on, it seems like the 15 minutes goes by way too fast.
Hey, I'm available anytime, man. It's good to be with you, and plenty to talk about you know, in the rearview mirror of everything that happened at IMS, and then certainly looking forward to lots of IndyCar action over the next couple weeks.
You know what? I've got to say this first and foremost. I had a feeling that this would happen, but the rookies and second-year drivers, holy cow, did they come out to play this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the one that really, you know, shines is Rinus VK, because he came away with the big result with a top five finish. But you're right. I mean, there were guys that were looking really strong. Oliver Askew with a great qualifying run, obviously made a mistake in the race and kind of threw that away. But some of these young guns, they're going to give these guys, these veterans, a run for their money as they're really starting to come along. Colton Herta, outstanding again. So, yeah, the future seems to be pretty bright in IndyCar, and some of those young guys really performed well this past weekend.
And that's the second, speaking of Oliver Askew, that's the second crash in 2 years out of the Aero SPM camp. As we saw last year, that, in my opinion, almost looked like what happened to Marcus Ericsson last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird. That's a weird spot on the racetrack where certainly you got to jump on the throttle, and you've got that long straightaway, and turn one is such a good passing zone. So, you know, getting a good run on corner exit is so important. But yeah, it makes you wonder. Hey, did the Schmidt Aero guys, you know, setup wise is something, you know, not good on those race cars to handle that part of the racetrack, or if it was just a kind of a random mistake to happen to both drivers. But in the short history of this GMR Grand Prix, it's pretty clear that that's a spot that can reach out and bite you.
And it doesn't matter if it's wet or dry, had the full course yellow come out. And that really put a lot of drivers who had a great strategy set up, really put them behind the eight ball, because now you have Scott Dixon that decided to go a little off sequence there.
Yeah, I mean, it completely flipped the race on its head, and it really kind of, you know, detonated the opportunities that Will Power had to score a win. I mean, Will was phenomenal over that first stint. Joseph Newgarden had his first pit stop. You know, he pitted early, got on the racetrack on those fresh Firestone tires, and was able to leapfrog two or three cars all the way up into the second position. Jack Harvey had such a great qualifying run. He was another one that was on that strategy to pit three times during the race. And then once you had that caution, all of a sudden, guys that hadn't pitted for the second time got kicked to the back of the field, and that included Power, Newgarden, and Harvey. And you're right, there it was. I mean, when these races, when you have the strategy flipped on its head, those are the best opportunities to get a surprise winner, to get a surprise podium. And wouldn't you know, Mike Holes, Chip Ganassi, Scott Dixon says, we don't care. We're still going to be up here. We're going to nail the strategy right. And ultimately, it was a dominant win. But yeah, I mean, I'm just not surprised at all that Scott Dixon's on the right end of a coin flip with the strategy.
And how much of it, these past two wins out of Scott Dixon, how much of it is bringing in Mike Cannon as the engineer?
You know, I joked with Mike Cannon. I saw him walking down pit lane after the win at Texas, and I said, Mike, I mean, you need to ask for a raise. You've only been with Chip for one race, but you're one for one. And he's like, yeah, I ought to just quit now. So now he's two for two. But no, I mean, he's been around the sport for a long time, and in recent years, obviously really found something engineering the car for Santino Ferrucci last year, as Ferrucci had a really surprising and impressive rookie season. And then you move him over with a veteran like Scott Dixon, and certainly a guy in Mike Hull calling the strategy, who's as good as anyone in the sport. And it's got the potential, and it's shown through the first two races, that this is not only capable of winning races, but gosh, Jeremy, I mean, if Scott Dixon isn't the favorite to win the championship right now, I don't know who is. I mean, it has been magic. And I think you're right. I think Michael Cannon is a big reason why.
And I have to say, the surprise of the weekend was seeing Simon Pagenaud out early on in qualifying, but that full course yellow ended up paying big dividends to keep that 22 car up near the front.
Yeah, he needed a break, and he got it. I remember he talked to Dave First on the radio network after qualifying and said, man, we thought the track was going to get super hot in the heat of the day and get really loose, and we got some cloud cover late on Friday, and the track just didn't heat up as much as everyone thought, and the adjustments that they made to set that car for qualifying was the exact opposite of what they needed to do. So it was super surprising to see Simon out in round one starting in row 10. But you're right, caught a good break, and then with some clean air and adjusting on that car, it looked like that I don't know if he would have had something for Scott Dixon. It would have been fascinating if we would have got a late caution and Simon would have been right there with Graham Rahal to challenge Scott Dixon. But certainly Simon found some speed in that Menards Chevrolet, and to get a podium position, you know, back it up after a good run at Texas, at least he's right there despite how dominant Scott Dixon is, he's within striking distance just two races in.
And there were two drivers who needed good runs this at the GMR Grand Prix. You had Graham Rahal, who did get that good run in second place, but Alexander Rossi, not such a good run for him after he encountered mechanical problems halfway through the race.
Yeah, Rossi's just got to be so frustrated with how good he was a year ago to come up just short and winning the championship and thinking, all right, we're going to come back just as strong in 2020 and for everything to go as bad as it has, and to see your main competitors, guys like Dixon and Pagenaud, be so good. Newgarden's been solid, not great. That's got to be awful frustrating for Rossi. And then, as you mentioned, for Graham Rahal, it's kind of been the story of his career, right? It's always so up and down. It wouldn't surprise me when we go to Road America if Graham is completely out to lunch and is at the back of the pack after looking so strong at Indianapolis. But I was really impressed with how he qualified, and that was kind of been the bugaboo and something that's plagued that team over the past year or so. They needed to qualify better, and when they do, usually those Rahal, Letterman, Lanigan cars have pace, and Graham showed it. They were good on strategy. And to come away with a second-place finish, I know that's big for the soon-to-be father, Graham Rahal.
Well, and taking a look at the points, speaking of how this is affecting Rossi, Rossi has 20 points, same as Tony Kanaan. Alex Palou, he's ahead of Max Chilton, granted, but behind him, ahead of Rossi, you have Rosenquist, Andretti, Sato. Already, though, you have Scott Dixon, who has 104 points of those two wins.
Yeah, and a couple of those guys you mentioned, Chilton and Kanaan, they've made one start. You know, Kanaan didn't race in the race, right, in Indianapolis, and Chilton didn't race at Texas. So, no, is it too early to hit the panic button? Probably. Alexander Rossi's incredibly talented. You know how good that team is. Would it shock me if Rossi goes to Road America and wins both races? Probably not. But the issue becomes looking up who's at the top of the standings, and that's Scott Dixon. And you and I both know Dixon's not going to give you a lot of opportunities where he makes mistakes and throws away points. So when you're consistently, after just two rounds, looking at the points and saying, boy, I got to outscore Scott Dixon, that's when you're in trouble. So Rossi's going to have to get hot, because this is a miserable, miserable start to the year.
And we'll talk about my thoughts on Rossi here shortly, but real quickly, Dixon with the win. He led 26 laps. Graham Rahal, 18 laps, second place. Pagenaud, third. Colton Herta, fourth. Rinus VK, fifth. Marcus Ericsson with a good showing in sixth. Seventh, the Newgarden. Eighth, the Pato Award. Ninth, the Santino Ferrucci. Tenth, the Takuma Sato. Some other notables, James Hinchcliffe in his second straight race. 11th, Connor Daly, 12th, Will Power, 20th. He only led 28 laps. He led the most laps in the race, and the bad yellow and not being able to get off the line after that next pit stop, that didn't help him either.
Yeah, and that, unfortunately, is something that's kind of always plagued Will Power, and it's what's going to make looking back at his legacy when it's all said and done so fascinating, because by the numbers and what we see with our eyes, Will Power is one of the greatest of this generation. But as it stands right now, he's got one Indy 500 win, which you don't take away from him, and just one championship. And you and I have both seen so many times when everything aligns for Will Power, he's absolutely unbeatable. But oftentimes for Will, when one thing goes wrong during a race, it usually compounds to two or three or four. And that's where he throws away a lot of points. So, yeah, it was a rough day for Will on a day that I think he thought he might have had it in the bag with how fast that Verizon car was, not only in qualifying, but the early pace. He's got such a good feel for that road course. Once the strategy got flipped on its head, boy, it was like an avalanche for Mr. Power.
Well, here's an interesting stat, too, for some who may not know. Scott Dixon is now only the third driver to win on the road course at Indianapolis. Because he had Simon and Will Power who won all the time.
Yeah, those were the only two who had ever scored victories at the Indianapolis Grand Prix, the road course. Will having three, Simon having three. So it was about time that we got a new winner. So it was good to see. And Scott Dixon crosses another one off the list. I mean, good Lord, I'd love to see how many racetracks in his career Scott Dixon has won at, but you can put another one on the list now with the road course in Indianapolis.
I might have to do that as a pet project for next week.
Nick
Yeoman from the IndyCar Radio Network joins us next two weekends, four races at two of my absolute favorite tracks. You've got Road America on Saturday and Sunday, then the next weekend, Friday night and Saturday night, the 17th and 18th, Iowa IndyCar 250s. Oh, man, these are going to be great stretches of races.
Yeah, and those racetracks are basically identical, right? I mean,
no, they're very identical. Yeah,
No, it's going to be great going to first up up to Elkhart Lake to that massive, nearly 4 mile road course at Road America. First of all, let me say this, Jeremy, it's going to be great that that both racetracks, as of right now, are going to allow fans. It's going to be a slow rollback, and certainly everyone's going to be asked to social distance and be safe. But man, it's going to be great to have some fans at the racetrack. But first at Road America, that fantastic, you know, lots of elevation change, fast road course for a doubleheader, and then we go to that tiny Bullring Oval in Iowa for some, you know, short track under the lights Midwestern racing. It's going to be great, and four races. I mean, a lot of points on the line. So for those guys like Power and Rossi that have stumbled to start this season, here's your opportunity. You have a good next couple weeks. You can be right back in things.
Well, when Rossi ended up out with his mechanical failures, I looked at my wife. I go, if there's one driver I don't want to be racing against at Road America, it's Rossi, because a pissed off Rossi is usually a fast Rossi.
Yeah, yeah. He was not happy after the race at Indianapolis, you know, just kind of dejected with how it went. And he is a guy that's got a good feel for Road America, awful good on these kind of natural terrain road courses. So if he's not one of the favorites this upcoming weekend, I don't know who is.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, especially because it's a short, in my opinion, it's a short turnaround. Normally for doubleheaders, we see this at Detroit especially, you get about a little bit short of 24 hours. This one, green flag flies, I think it's what, 5:30? No, 4:30 yeah. Central. And then you've got an 11 o'clock green flag on Sunday. So very tight turnaround for the teams.
Oh, and think about this too. I mean, these are two kind of unforgiving racetracks. Road America, when you crash at Road America, yeah, that's a road course. It's not like there's concrete barriers waiting around every corner, but you've seen over the years, crash at Road America, you usually crash hard because of how much speed you're carrying at that place. So you have a bad Saturday, that might put you behind the eight ball for Sunday. And then at Iowa, I mean, that there's going to be contact in those races. There's just no doubt about it. So you absolutely want to get through race number one, the Friday race, as clean as possible so that you've got a good car ready to go for Saturday.
Well, it's like, you know, you talk about contact at Road America. Ask A.J. Foyt what happens when you can't turn into turn one.
Yeah, or ask Catherine Legg, who with barrel yes. rolling, you know, down that back straightaway. I mean, it is a place that is awful unforgiving. So to have two races there, I would be surprised if anyone's overly aggressive and really pushes the issue in race number one, because you've got to have a strong weekend altogether.
All right, so this past weekend, not only did you do the IndyCar Radio Network for the GMR Grand Prix, but you were also part of PRN's IndyCar Radio's blended coverage of the NASCAR Xfinity and the Brickyard 400. Let's talk about how you thought those stock cars fared around the road course.
Man, I honestly thought the Xfinity race, and listen, as an IndyCar employee, I probably shouldn't say this, I thought the Xfinity race stole the show. I thought it was the best race of the weekend. And NASCAR has found something over the last handful of years, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because some of their drivers have gotten and become better road racers, or maybe it's just the background. You've got more well-rounded race car drivers. But they've consistently put on pretty good shows when they go to road courses, whether it be the Charlotte Roval or at Road America, Watkins Glen, Sonoma. The road racing in NASCAR is usually pretty good. So I was pleasantly surprised with how good that Xfinity race was, with guys like Chase Briscoe and Noah Gragson and Austin Cindric slugging it out towards the end. AJ Allmendinger at Open Wheeler that was up there as well. I thought it was a really good show, and I think there's a bright future for that Pennzoil 150 wherever it ends up on the calendar to race there once again.
Well, and then you also take a look at, you know, you do have some drivers who came from the SCCA ranks. Some of them also go play in Trans Am, or if you're in the Ford program, you can run in the Michelin Pilot Challenge in the GS class. So a lot of these manufacturers and drivers are able to get this road course experience.
Yeah, and I think it pays off for a lot of these guys. I mean, look at a guy like Austin Cindric, who has raced just about everything. I mean, he's raced sports cars, he's raced, you know, the junior formula open wheel cars, and now is doing a great job in the Xfinity series. And now it kind of brings up the obvious question of, okay, how about the Cup guys? How would they fare on the road course? I think they'd probably put on a very similar good show. But you know, whether people are going to be keen to moving the Brickyard 400 on the road course, that's a whole nother topic. But I thought the road racing was really good for the Xfinity series. And I think IndyCar and NASCAR might have hit on something here. I'm hoping we can do more doubleheaders. It was a lot of fun for us to work with the NASCAR guys from PRN and call all of those races. And eventually, once fans can come back to the racetrack full bore, I think it's going to be a great bang for the buck for the racetracks that are able to take advantage of both series working together.
Well, just think, when the topic was discussed, you know, 10, 15 years ago when you and I first started getting into, you know, working in racing, it was unheard of. Like, yeah, that won't ever happen. Never, never. But ever since Roger Penske came on board, Eddie Gossage started warming up to the idea. It's becoming more and more that these tracks are like, maybe we should try this.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, for so many years, it was cats and dogs. It was, you were either an open wheel fan or a stock car fan, and you didn't like the other series. And I think a lot of people have kind of softened their stance on that and said, hey, how about we just be race fans and we like it all? And the bottom line is, from a business standpoint, you know, certainly IndyCar, due to the split in the 90s, they've been trying to make the baby steps to get back to relevance to where they were before. Still not there yet and may never get that point. Also NASCAR. I mean, they've taken a bit of a nosedive in popularity here over the last decade, and it's not like anyone, either series, is filling grandstands every race they go. So I think it makes sense to, hey, let's check the egos at the door. Let's try to make this work. And I have a good feeling, Jeremy, that if fans would have been allowed at the Speedway, it would have been quite a hit. I think a lot of folks were happy with the coverage from NBC and listening to us on IndyCar Radio. And I think if we get an opportunity to do something like this again, I think the fans are going to come out big time.
And by the way, I did see the picture that you tweeted out last night from your perch in turn two, trying to identify the cars. I can't identify the cars when you're taking a picture with a potato.
I had a couple people say, well, I can pick out the pace truck, and yes, that's about it. Yeah, race ran so late. I took another picture right at the end of the race where the sun was nearly setting behind the front stretch grandstand. It was picturesque. It was a little tough to call with the sun in my eyes. So, yeah, I'm one of those that's a team, let's start every race at noon,
yep,
so we can avoid rain delays, lightning delays, or lengthy red flags. But, yeah, we very nearly pulled an all-nighter at the Speedway yesterday.
You know as well as I do how the weather is in the Midwest. You get a pop-up storm around 3, 4 o'clock, it rains out, and then that's it. But I've got to say, I've had a couple enduro races where I was calling into the sunshine, so I get where you're coming from. It ain't fun, so.
Yeah, it's a challenge for sure.
All right, Nick, we'll chat with you in a couple of weeks once you get rested after the twin doubleheaders. For us, we've got Simon Sykes. He's won the past four of the past six F1600 races. We'll chat with him, and we'll have all sorts of fun here next week on Inside Open Wheel. Take care. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to catch us on Apple Podcasts.